Chapter 3. The small harbor town was as deserted as it appeared from the deck of the ship, and as we all traversed the docks, the creaking of the old wood sounded like a gunshot in the eerie atmosphere. Even the oppressive muteness of a red sky event was nothing compared to the utter desertion that shrouded the whole place. It was clear by the abandoned carts, boarded-up windows, and rotting food vendor stands that the people who were here left in a hurry without being sure they would even return. It was also clear by the marks and stinking mounds of clay festering on the boardwalks what had run them off. The scourge.
"I am not liking this," Siskern said, as he looked at me askance from under the arms of his sagging brother. "Even with the Red Sky event, there should still be people here. The royal garrison should have returned straight after. Unless..."
"Are you sure there were any of them left to return, lad?"
Jenner ventured, as he stepped over a busted open suitcase.
"If the garrison's numbers are depleted so much, then it is no wonder my Uncle Gris has written so urgently about the situation with the Lower Terrans," the raptor man mused.
"What does this have to do with the Lower Terrans?" I asked.
"I'm sure by now you have seen Tear Isle's unusual shape," Siskern said.
"You mean the way it looks like someone tried to spear a sacred fish?"
Horace snorted as he looked up at the island that resembled a stake canted slightly to one side. Because I saw a picture of Tear on one of the captain's maps, I figured the rest of the island's thorn-shaped form was hidden under the water much like an iceberg.
"That is apt," Siskern nodded with a grin. "A spear pierces the flesh deep, just like Tear does to Aventol. When we mine for ore, we mine close to Aventol's veins, and because the membrane is so thin, the conduits which the scourge can travel through are more abundant than anything on Nata. Hence the pressure for the echelons to come to some sort of ascension accord that would allow the lowish peoples sanctuary in the uppers. So now, you see, this is the crux of the..."
Regent Siskorn groaned just then and forced Siskern to halt. The once strong and imposing dino man looked severely diminished, as if he'd been without a proper meal for way longer than the 5 days Soaring was trapped in the eye of the storm. His scaly dark skin now had an ashen appearance that made the scar over his eye all the more pronounced, and it was apparent Siskern was doing most of the work keeping him upright.
"We should rest a moment."
Shay sent a worried look at the ill dino man, and Siskern lowered them both down to sit against one of the abandoned storefronts.
"Amaya, do you know much about medicinal herbs and plants?" "What I don't actually know, I can make up for with my touch."
The Oryx woman wiggled her fingers, and each fingertip glowed faintly with soft light.
"I was hoping you'd say that."
The Phoenix woman smiled.
"I think I saw some mushrooms growing in one of the rotting rowboats tied up at the pier we just passed. If they're anything similar to the flycaps on Nata, they could potentially be ground into a tea. It might strengthen the regent."
"Lady Shaelia, your kindness is without bounds," Siskern said, as he helped his brother take a drink out of the skein on his armored belt. "In light of my brother's erratic behavior as of late, some would say it is better than he deserves."
"We've survived a lot so far,"
my phoenix wife said in her benevolent voice.
"The way I see it, we all must take care of each other in any way if we hope to carry on thus."
"Be careful," I told her, and I was both pleased and a little turned on when both women brandished their hidden weapons. Amaya smirked like she knew what I was thinking about and twirled the dagger from her concealed thigh holster, while Shay unwrapped her rock sling that was doubling as a headband.
"Always,"
my wife said with a small smile as she shook out her crimson hair. And she and the Oryx woman went back the way we came from to check out some mushrooms.
"Asher Siskern, if I may ask a question without sounding presumptuous,"
Jenner asked as he gazed out over the boardwalk, and then at the edifice of the sheer cliffs.
"You may do so, tiny man, and I will know not to take umbrage," he said agreeably,
took the skein back from his brother, and got to his feet in order to investigate the contents of the barrel behind him.
"Why is it the lowish are not allowed to migrate to the upper echelon?"
the koala man asked.
All of the Ashers in the Uppers do not want lowish crossbreeding to take place, because they feel as if the brutish traits they pride themselves on will be diluted out to favor someone with my features.
The raptor man explained, as he angled his spade-shaped head in the sunlight to show off his much more svelte physique compared to his stocky and angular brother.
And they also want the lowish to remain in the mines, so the upper workers do not bring the sickness into the echelon, even though Gris keeps trying to explain that the research done on the ore sickness proves it is only contractable through exposure, not transmitted Terran to Terran.
If there is such prejudice, then why do you look like the people your people hate?
Rylan piped up in that obviously curious way kids had.
Meep!
Gelf said into the awkward silence from her spot perched on some sort of box. And when no one did anything, she resumed rummaging through the thing like a deranged raccoon. Hey, bud, I said to Rylan. You know that presumptuous thing that Mr. Jenner apologized for in advance?
Oh, no, that was rude, wasn't it?
He backpedaled.
Don't fret, youngling.
The raptor man laughed and patted him on the head with his clawed hand.
I am the son of my sire's second wife, who was a concubine from the lowish leader's clan. My birth was the attempt at a union between the echelons, and it has kept the peace so far. But I fear the lowish cannot withstand many more red skies. That is why there is pressure to reach an ascension accord.
Sounds like you need to get ambassadoring, Chief, Horace said, and slung his arm around my shoulders. That's not a word, H, I reminded him, and shoved his arm off me. Ever since Siskern gave me the title, the Falcon Man had been trying to slip it in wherever he could. And his teasing confidence was amusing, but first things first. Hey, Siskern, how do your people normally go to or from the island?
They don't.
Siskern blinked at me with a puzzled look on his reptilian face.
Right, the whole isolationist thing.
I rubbed my eyes and then craned my head back to look up at the sheer cliffs of Tear's natural battlement, until my neck cracked. So, how do your guards get back to the palace?
They take flying mounts called squallers, he explained, and then pointed to one of those small yellow pterosaurs I saw earlier. They are the bigger version of those.
What are those ones called?
Zoe queried, with her ears perked forward in interest as the creature perched on a wooden pole. Her tail swished back and forth, and I wondered if she would have chased it if she had a little less self-control.
The smaller ones are called screeches, Siskern said, and chucked a small stone at the creature, which caused it to screech.
Great name, that! Right on the gold! You Terrans have a way with words, don't you?
Captain Nemus suddenly appeared from one of the abandoned buildings with his arms full of various odds and ends.
Sorry to interrupt, but look at all these left-behind things I found. If I could make a small suggestion, we should let the Regent rest while we go bobbing for more talks.
That's not how,
Jenner began, but before he could diverge us into another topic, I interrupted. I hate to cut the linguistics lecture short, Mr. Jenner, but I think the captain is on to the right idea, I said, and widened our little huddle to include Shay and Amaya as they returned as well.
What did we miss about right ideas?
Shay asked as she crouched, pulled a leather cloth out of the pack Zoe had put on the ground, and wrapped the mushrooms up in it for safekeeping. I was just about to tell everyone how I think we need to hunker down here for the rest of the night. I turned west and held my hand up where the sea met the sky, and I discovered I could only fit two fingers in the patch of sky between the sun and the horizon, like a double shot of whiskey. The sun will set in two... lengths?
Yes.
Zoe confirmed that I'd told time correctly, like she had recently taught me when we were all aboard the Soaring Light, whenever the captain wasn't running us through death hurricane drills. So, everyone, scout out the immediate area for more left-behind things. But be sure to be smart, I instructed. Only pick useful, lightweight items you're willing to carry on your own. Siskern, does this place have any type of inn?
No inn, the raptor man said, and whipped off the cloak from around his neck so he could tuck it behind his brother for more cushion. But there is a barracks where the royal garrison was housed.
Take me to it, I said, and then turned to my trusty second. But first, Horace, you and Nemus are in charge of the scouting. Zoe, will you set a rotation between you and the other ladies on watching Siskorn? I also need you to run a perimeter and check for predators with that sharp nose of yours.
Gladly.
She purred with another swish of her tail as another screecher flew overhead.
What you want me to do, Dad?
Rylan asked. Where do you think you'll be the most useful, kiddo? I twisted around the crossbow strapped to my back so I could give it a once-over.
You let me choose?
He cocked his head and narrowed his eyes. I'm not trying to pull a fast one on you or anything. I chuckled at his suspicious expression. And then I cocked and latched the string, even though I kept it unloaded for now. I honestly want you to tell me where you would place yourself if you were me.
Oh, are you sure this isn't a test?
He queried. Promise, I grinned and winked.
And I can even go with you?
He asked. If that's where you think you can do the most good, I pointed out, then sure. My son tapped a finger against his chin as he thought for a moment.
Actually, I think I might be better off scouting with Gelf. I'll stay here.
If you're sure, I said as my eyebrows rose to my hairline. I was impressed he actually chose the mature and responsible choice, even though I could tell he wanted to come with me and Siskern. I'll leave it up to you and Uncle Horace to take care of everyone.
You can count on us, Chief, the Falcon Man said, and hung himself between Anwar and my son.
Great. Are you ready, Siskern? I turned to the reptile man.
Yes. Let us make sure the barracks are suitable, he said, and unhooked his whip from his belt to have on hand.
Just because this place seemed to be deserted, it would be stupid to assume every building was clear of threats. We'll be back, and when we return, be ready to either move to the barracks if they're habitable, or be prepared to spend one more night on Soaring, I said. And with those orders in place, Siskern and I set out for these supposed barracks.
You take command of your brigade with such ease and confidence for one so young, the Raptor Man commented as we made our way. With the way Siskorn is ailing, I fear he may not be able to fulfill his duties as regent right when we get back, which means the task will fall to me to take over.
You don't sound pleased, I said as I picked up some strange bungee-like vine with the end of my crossbow. It didn't look like much, but when camping it was always good to have some extra rope on hand.
Staying in the palace was never something I wanted for myself, and I was always happy to let that fall to Siskorn.
He sighed and shook his head as we approached a long rectangular building.
The truth is, I am jealous of you. Being an ambassador was my freedom.
That just means you'll have to teach me the ropes until your brother recovers and you can get back to ambassadoring, as Horace likes to say, I said.
This is my hope, he said,
but his smile was uncertain as he stared up at the cliffs.
I fear we must climb over Tear's defenses come first light tomorrow. There is another outpost a third of the way up where my fervent wish is there are some squalors left when we get there.
Why don't we worry about that tomorrow, I suggested to the downtrodden raptor man and patted him on the shoulder. For now, let's check this place out. We entered the barracks and did a sweep of the place to make sure it was free of any predators. And it was, aside from more screechers roosting in the eaves that were easily scared away by the beam of my stone light. It looked good enough for the night, if a little dusty. But there were plenty of clean beds and a large fireplace we could cook over, so I was calling it a win.
They really had no time before they were run out of the place, Siskern said, with an edge of that worry still in his voice. Normally there are at least three squalors at the post at all times. They are changed out and tended to each shift rotation. It looks as if they finally flew off after eating all the food.
He examined an empty slop trough by pushing it around with one of his sharp-toed claws. Come on, Siskern, let's round everyone up before it gets dark, I said, since I was at a loss as to what to tell him to ease his mind. This was one of those situations where all we could do was prepare for any foreseeable disasters as best as possible, because once we were on our way, there was no turning back.
More soup, Ambassador Siskern?
Amaya asked, when the whole crew was finally settled in for the night. We were all lounging campfire style on the wooden floor of the barracks, while Jenner and Rylan finished making a log of supplies salvaged from our searching. The Oryx woman was making the rounds with seconds of a soup made from the fresh vegetables Shay and she were also able to forage, since Siskern told them both the fresh produce would be rather lacking once we hit the tree line. "What's the final tally, Mr. Jenner?" I asked, after I drank the last of my soup from my metal everything cup. "Yay camping."
"Not a lot, I'm afraid,"
the koala man clicked his teeth as he tutted over his notes. "Yay camping?"
"Yeah, it was shit pickings,"
Rylan said, and I nearly facepalmed when I realized where he got that language from.
"Did I use that right, that?"
"Yes, you probably shouldn't be saying that," I groaned, as Horace tried and failed to contain his snorting laughter. "Mr. Jenner?"
"So far, we have amassed 6 dried woot husks, a large sack of ashroot seeds, that now has to be pared down to 5 smaller sacks due to practical reasons, a few tools in good repair, and 4 bundles of this interesting vine rope. Although, we might need to wrap the rope with something. I've noticed if there is pressure exerted upon it, thorns will shoot to the surface. I have a nasty cut on my thumb now."
"Let me see,"
Shay said, and I smiled when she brought her first aid kit out and sat next to him so she could pull his furry paw into her lap. "We're going to try to hike up another outpost tomorrow, guys," I said, and reached for one of the bundles of thorn rope so I could examine it. I pinched a piece of the rope and saw what Jenner was talking about when a series of stubby thorns pushed out with pressure. "It's going to be rough, but we can get there if we stick together. Siskern and I discussed this earlier, but we think leaving at dawn is the best bet for maximum sunlight."
"Yes,"
the raptor man said, and set aside his wooden bowl.
"The tree line is not far from here, and we are likely to have cold rain and possibly snow the higher we travel. Discard any clothing not apt for the inclement weather."
"Amaya, that means shoes,"
Anwar said like a proper big sister.
"I know,"
she pouted, and I hid a grin with my hand at how cute she looked when she was put out. "Also, stay on the path between Siskern and me," I said. "Horace, I might need you to float in between with your bow handy. Siskern was telling me screechers and squallers aren't the only things on this island that pose a threat."
"We will make sure not to stray,"
Shay said as she came to lounge next to me.
"Now, let us rest and put this day behind us."
"You're right," I said, and relaxed against her. There was only so much we could prepare for with such limited resources anyway, and it was no use worrying about them instead of getting sleep. "You heard the lady, everyone. Time for bed."
"Oh, well, now I'm not tired,"
Rylan huffed, even though he was snuggled up against Shay while Gelf snored in his lap.
"Me either," Horace said.
"We should have a story."
I chuckled at that and stretched my legs out in front of me so my feet were closer to the roaring fire.
"I agree, but which one?"
"I quite like the story of Brea's comet,"
Shay suggested.
"I know Blue Night has long passed, but it is such a beautiful story to fall asleep to."
"Hey, you should tell it, Mom,"
Rylan said and gestured to Zoe, who was sharpening her knives on the bunk Shay and I were leaning against.
"You tell it real well."
"Me?"
The startled Catwoman blinked at all of us gathered around like she was expecting there to be another awesome storyteller we were talking about. "I agree. You should go for it." I tilted my head back and gave her an upside-down wink.
"Oh, okay. Well,
She started shyly and then paused to compose her thoughts. When she spoke again, it was in her warm, low timbre, and as I made eye contact with Shay, I knew why she suggested this in the first place.
"Long ago, this world was a sunless wasteland full of violent creatures. Desperate and dying, the people cried out for salvation, and the goddess heard them. With her tears, Mercedes poured out the ocean and drowned the scourge that hunted her people. And then, with her own heart, she gave us a son so life could flourish out of the darkness."
Her soothing tone and rich words washed over all of us like a spell, and one by one everyone dropped off for some much-needed rest. Even Zoe finally succumbed to the warm, lethargic atmosphere she'd created, fell asleep with her warm body curled up against the back of my shoulders, while Shay slept soundly with her head in my lap, since we were too comfortable to make it to one of the actual bunks. It was fine by me, though, especially because I was still wide awake with no signs of flagging. The wind outside began to pick up the longer the night wore on, and here, surrounded by my crew, I was starkly reminded of the reality that this would be as good as it was going to get for a while. Who knew what was going to crop up? And I would be lying if I didn't say I wasn't feeling the pressure of taking care of 9 other people. But the people I had with me were actually pretty smart and capable, so maybe I was freaking out over nothing. Well, mostly nothing. All of our preparedness and stamina would be pointless if the ailing region's health continued to be a problem. The way I calculated it, in order for us to make it to the outpost before dark, we needed to maximize our daylight to cover as much ground as possible. If Siskorn could barely hold himself up, Siskern would have to carry him the whole way. The ridiculously strong Raptor Man had done it before, but a whole extra body hiking the hike of doom might be his limit. But what were we going to do? We couldn't just leave him. I was so caught up in my thoughts I hadn't even noticed Siskorn's piercing eyes on me from his mattress closest to the fire until he coughed to draw my attention.
Brightwood,
the regent suddenly rasped. And just like staring at a snake, I felt frozen by his icy blue stare. The way he was staring at me felt like he could read the guilty thoughts off my forehead like the marquee in Times Square. And, based off his slow, serrated grin, I feared for a split second he really could.